Okay, so I'm just going to talk briefly about the role of the scheme actuary, the insurance approach compared with the welfare model, and also a couple of decision support tools that we've developed to assist planners with the insurance principles. Okay, so the role of the scheme actuary is set out in the legislation, thanks to the efforts of a number of people to make sure that the actuarial role was there, including Peter. It outlines a number of the reporting requirements, so in particular the financial sustainability report that would include the actuarial annual valuation and also commentary on the scheme processes such as eligibility, resource allocation and outcomes. Also in that report there's a need to comment on provision of support to people with a disability, and that's just not NDIA supports but also other mainstream supports. So in parallel to the NDIS reform there's actually the National Disability Strategy, and that work looks at people with disability needing to be able to access mainstream services in order to improve outcomes. So as an example, in order to improve your life you need a good education, you need access to employment services, you might need access to housing and also access to health. So whilst the NDIA isn't providing those supports, in order to, as I said, improve outcomes for people with disability, it's important to monitor that access to mainstream services. There's also a need for quarterly reporting as well. So I've got a slide here on insurance principles, and I realise that it's probably firmly embedded in the brains of the most people in the room. However, it's extremely different from the current welfare model. David talked about the pillars, choice and control, community and mainstream, and also the insurance approach. Having done a lot of work in the current welfare system, there's some pockets of choice and control that are working well, and then there's other little pockets of where local area coordination has helped support people in the community. But generally speaking, when I say the insurance word within the current welfare system, they say, well, what in the world are you talking about? So in terms of some of these insurance principles and how they compare with the current system, in the first instance, there's an assessment of need. So who is our target population and what level of supports should this target population be getting? And as we know, the Productivity Commission suggested that was probably going to result in about a doubling of the current funding. In the current welfare model, there's a historical budget, and then the next year that's just rolled over with inflation. If there's going to be any increase to that budget, there needs to be a business case put forward to relevant Treasury departments, which may or may not come off. Individual assessment of support need and resource allocation is an entitlement scheme, whereas within the current system there's a bucket of money, people come through the door, they might get a package, and when that money runs out, that's it. They might go on the waiting list, but generally speaking they don't receive services. Strong monitoring, governance, reporting and management. Once again, pretty common to accident compensation schemes, but extremely different from the current system. A lot of the reports come out about a year after the event and they're solidly focused on outputs. So we provided X number of hours of respite or this many supported accommodation places. But there's nothing about the person and their outcomes and really not a lot of useful information for management to understand the system and how they can improve it. Also, the focus on early intervention or investment and long-term outcomes doesn't exist well in the current system. People managing programs, they focus on their annual budget, and there's not really a concept of if we invest in this hoist or vehicle modification that's going to save us in the long term. And in fact, the program guidelines set out are quite restrictive, so that sort of practice wouldn't be able to happen anyway. So I've said it a number of times, but it's certainly a big shift in thinking from the current welfare model. And I also spend a lot of time in the sector talking about what the insurance or the NDIS model is not. So when people hear insurance, they think, oh, private insurance, I have to take out a premium and that's going to be based on my underlying characteristics. It's like, well, no, it's not going to be along those lines. People also talk about social insurance, particularly the European style. And it's going to be a levy on employers and it's going to look at income replacement. It's like, well, no, it's not the NDIA model either. A lot of people also mention Medicare. I'm going to be entitled to services and I'm going to get the services when I need them. Well, that's definitely true. However, Medicare, there's not really a contract or the concept of mutual responsibility with the person using Medicare services, and certainly no planning for outcomes. People then also think of accident compensation, in particular lump sums, which is not then how the NDIS is working either, with an annual planning process. Also spend quite a bit of time talking about what are the benefits of the insurance approach, because within the current sector it's like, well, why should we change? The idea of risk pooling: disability is unpredictable and it's unaffordable, so it's a community responsibility. Risk estimation, I talked about that briefly before, but certainly the concept of coming up with reasonable necessary support for our target population. Prudential governance and accountability, the idea of constant surveillance and transparency is not really in the current system. And lastly, the planning for positive outcomes, so the ideas around early intervention and outcomes planning. So in terms of helping out our planners and how they might implement and work with some of these insurance principles, we've come up with two decision support tools. The first one is a reference package decision support tool. And what this looks at is a person based on a number of their characteristics, so their age, sex, Indigenous status, primary health condition, and also in terms of their functional capabilities. What do we think a reasonable and necessary support package might be? So within the current system, the planner sits down with their participant, they go through their goals, and they come up with a statement of support for that person. That statement of support then has a dollar value against it, and the planners put that information into the tool. The tool then looks up, okay, based on those characteristics, what do we think the value of a support package would be? And depending on how that compares, the planner themselves might be able to approve that plan. Otherwise, it might go to the senior planner. And when certainly there's a huge deviation between the plan and the reference package, then it can go up to the Director of Service Delivery or even Liz as the State Manager. Then the other tool we've developed is the Lifetime Cost Estimator. So Liz had a good example of that in her work, so I won't go into it in too much detail. But certainly the concept of a liability and investing up front and what impact that might have was very new to a lot of the planners in the scheme. So we're undertaking sort of significant work to help them understand that. All righty, hand over to Peter.